Welcome to Real Time Real Talk, a Dexcom podcast dedicated to pharmacists and other healthcare professionals on the front lines helping people thrive who live with diabetes.
Having lived so much of my life with diabetes without a continuous glucose monitoring system, I can say the challenges were just constantly having to poke my finger, stopping practice just to make sure that I could test to know what was going on.
Dexcom is the leading developer of real-time continuous glucose monitoring.
If you're using CGM, being proactive and being ready to have your glucose meter handy, treating before a blood sugar is actually low to prevent the risk of a low, all of these can be important tips. But I think what's also really important is the patient goal should always be first.
For more information on all Dexcom technologies, please visit Dexcom.com. That's Dexcom.com.
Welcome to Real Time Real Talk with me, Cher Pastore. I'm on the clinical education team at Dexcom, where I've been working for over 5 years. And today we're going to be talking to Desi Zaharieva, and we are talking all about exercise and the complex relationship with type 1 diabetes. Thanks for joining me today, Desi. It's so great to have you here.
Thank you so much for the invitation. It's great to be here.
Awesome. Yeah, I remember we met each other. I saw you present at the American Diabetes Association conference this year, and it was such a great presentation all about diabetes and exercise. And I was like, I have to have her on an episode. So we did it.
Thank
We're
you.
Here. Okay, great.
I'm excited. Thank you.
Good. So first, just tell me and our listeners a little bit, you know, about yourself and your experience with type 1 diabetes and kind of your personal relationship to exercise and diabetes.
Yeah. So my name's Desi Zaharieva, and I was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes at the age of 7. And I was born in Bulgaria, but raised in Canada and now working in the U.S., but my journey of living with diabetes and navigating this new diagnosis was all in Canada, where we were still trying to navigate with my family a new diagnosis, really didn't speak the language very well, and having to understand sort of how to get through day by day without the technology that we have nowadays. It was a lot of challenges for my family, as it is for all families with a new diagnosis. And the exercise piece just sort of fell into place. I was always an active kid with, you know, type 1 diabetes. That didn't change. My family always pushed me to keep being active.
And so that really wasn't in your kind of like way that you manage diabetes. You just liked to exercise, right? Or was that in the background? Okay, I know that exercise might help me with my glucose levels, so I'm going to do that. Was that anywhere in the thought process?
You know, I don't think so. At the age of 7, you're just kind of thinking, you know, I was an active kid. I loved sports. There wasn't one particular sport. I played everything at school. My family was very active. We loved to be outdoors. And so it was really just a lifestyle for me. It was something that we had done before diagnosis. And really, while we were figuring out this diagnosis, we thought, why not continue to be active and figure out the challenges and how to navigate this condition while we exercise together, while we figure it out.
Okay. And so what was your first experience? Did you have to use a blood glucose monitor? And were you on multiple daily injections? Like, did you go on a pump? Can you talk us through a little bit about your evolution of how you managed your diabetes?
Yeah, absolutely. So exactly like you said, multiple daily injections is how it started. And no continuous glucose monitoring system that was not available when I was diagnosed. So it was back to finger poking, where, you know, a reading could take up to a minute and you had to calibrate strips. And when you didn't get enough blood, you had to do it all over again. And some days I was poking my finger, you know, 10 to 20 times a day. Being so active, we really just didn't understand what was happening with my blood sugars. And so there was a lot of finger pokes, a lot of nighttime checks to wake up in the middle of the night, and injections for a long time. I actually didn't even consider or start on a pump until I was about 13. And the story I always tell is that it felt a little bit of pressure from my family and my endocrinologist. And, you know, looking back, it was a blessing. I'm grateful that I had the chance to start on a pump. But I think what is really important is that the patient's voices are always heard and they don't get pushed to start into something until they're ready. Because I felt like, I remember telling my parents, I don't want to be on a pump because I feel like a walking hospital. And I just couldn't imagine my life in sport and being connected to something all the time. So for me, at the age of 13, I thought I would consider it because my doctors and my parents were sort of pushing me, but you know, it ended up working out very well. But I think it is important now to always ask the patients what they want. If they're not ready for a pump, that's really important for us to listen to.
Agree. Yeah. I mean, I was in private practice for a long time as a diabetes educator, and it, you know, has to be a two-way conversation. But, you know, I think it's important to bring the conversation up, right? Start having the conversation, and then hopefully whenever the person is ready, they can take that journey.
Exactly.
So let's just fast forward a little bit and tell us all about kind of how you got into your research and the doctor that you studied under and kind of what led you to your most recent research.
So there are many years where this journey has been going on. It's still ongoing, but you know, I've been in diabetes research and exercise specifically for over a decade at this point. So, you know, I started my master's research with Dr. Michael Riddell, who is the leading expert, and he is my biggest inspiration when it comes to type 1 diabetes and exercise research. He is who I dreamt of researching under. You know, him being my mentor was an incredible opportunity because he was putting out all of the publications and everything related to glucose management and diabetes around exercise. And I started my master's, continued to do my PhD with Mike. And now we still have a very close, you know, collaboration and friendship. And it's really just a blessing to have him in my corner and be able to kind of continue to work together. And now my current research is I moved to the US and started initially at postdoc. And now I'm an instructor at Stanford working in pediatrics. So the transition was I went from adults and my research was adult type 1 diabetes and exercise research. And now I moved to pediatrics, so working with kids and doing very similar work around exercise and type 1 diabetes management.
And anything in particular, is it type 1 and exercise and technology? Is it automated insulin delivery systems, or is it all of these things?
It is. It is kind of all of those things and more. I think anything to me around exercise is interesting. Just my research focus is exercise, type 1 diabetes predominantly, technology, whether that is, you know, automated insulin delivery, continuous glucose monitoring systems, accelerometry, like activity trackers, trying to find out how all of these systems can work together. And, you know, there's other things that we do too. A lot of my work right now is actually currently translational research in type 1 diabetes. So it's taking all of these complex consensus guidelines that we publish on exercise and diabetes and trying to simplify them and use them in real world day-to-day practice. And so a lot of it is also translating this work into real lived experience.
Yeah. So can we talk about that now? Let's just shift a little bit. And maybe if you can tell like your top three things, what are some of the biggest challenges that a person with type 1 diabetes has when they're going to exercise, and whether it's planned exercise, unplanned, or just a little bit of that?
I think you touched on one of the most difficult parts is that day-to-day variability is one of the biggest challenges. We always say, you know, for myself, living with type 1 diabetes for over 25 years now, if I do the same thing today and the same thing tomorrow, I could have a very different response, even if I followed the same protocol. And that's just one of the challenges of living with type 1 diabetes is the day-to-day variability, even if we're keeping things constant. And so that makes it really challenging. And a lot of people with diabetes will say, it's not working. What I'm trying is not working. And I think that goes back to one of the most important things is just patience and realizing that that is one of the biggest hurdles, that there are so many differences from one person to the next, and also within a person one day to the next. And I would say that's one of the biggest challenges. But you know, I can't speak on everybody's behalf with diabetes. I will say that for myself and a lot of the research that we do, some of the challenges are not always knowing what to do. Is that different types, intensities, durations of exercise can all impact our blood glucose levels differently. If I'm stressed today and not stressed tomorrow, if I'm competing tomorrow and doing a practice today, all of this can lead to a different outcome in my glucose responses. I would also say that's one of the big challenges around exercise and diabetes. And I think the last one, if I were to pick one, is probably just having too much insulin on board when it's an unplanned activity. This is kind of the point that you touched on, is that we can try to plan ahead, but the reality is that we can't have every moment of our life planned. And so say today I took a little bit, you know, more insulin for the food that I ate, but then decided I was going to go exercise. I hadn't really planned ahead. And now I have to think about all of these challenges, that unplanned exercise is just something that's now thrown at you. And you have to deal with the cards that you've been dealt. Like, you have to figure out, what am I going to do with my glucose management in this situation? Am I going to eat some carbs? Am I going to delay exercise? Do I need to think of something else to try? And sometimes you just don't know where to start.
And could you walk us through like a perfect scenario? Like, what happens if you knew, okay, today you're going to go run? Maybe just we could help some people out there. So you are going to go run or do whatever exercise you know that you're going to do today at 3 p.m. and just say it all goes according to plan. Like, what would your glucose management schedule look like?
Well, I will start by saying we can do our best, but I say striving for perfection is not always realistic when it comes to diabetes. We can do our best, and I don't want it to be kind of not a hopeful way to think. I want to make sure that people do feel empowered and motivated to exercise, but I also want to be realistic in that perfection is really hard to strive for with diabetes. So let's just try to navigate this as best as we can. And so with that said, if I was going to go exercise and we were planning it in advance, say we were going to go for a run, we could think ahead. And one of the big conditions would be, what insulin modality are you using? Are you on a pump? Are you on injections? When did you last eat? These are all important questions to ask. When did I last take insulin? And maybe how is my glucose trending? I think those are some of the key questions I always like to ask myself. And based on a lot of the recent publications, are important factors to consider when it comes to exercising safely. So if we walk through each of those situations, what type of exercise am I doing? A run. Runs are typically the type of exercise that may drop your blood sugars because it's using up a lot of energy from the muscles. We may need to consider having carbohydrates on hand because if our blood sugars start to trend down or drop, we may want to have some carbs handy, maybe some fast-acting carbs, something to get into our system quickly. How long the exercise is can impact when we need to be eating those carbs. And then when did we last eat or how much insulin do we have in our system? If I just took a bolus of insulin for a meal 1 to 2 hours before exercise, just be aware that that's going to automatically increase your risk of low blood sugars during exercise. So definitely having those extra snacks on hand. Maybe the consideration of delaying exercise by an hour, if you have the flexibility to do so, by having less insulin on board, it could make it a little bit easier to manage. Less insulin in the circulation is one less thing that we would have to navigate. And of course, the last piece is just how are we managing, in addition to, again, injections or a pump or continuous glucose monitoring? You know, I think that's going to make it very different for different people. If you're on injections, you know, there's not as much flexibility on what we can do. If you're using an automated insulin delivery system, we can set an exercise mode or a higher exercise target where the target is raised. And ideally, if we can do that 1 to 2 hours before exercise, that's going to give the pump enough time to actually get our blood sugars up to that higher target and prepare us for exercise. There's a lot of things that we need to consider, and you can see this list is sort of ongoing, but I would say those are the first couple of things that I almost always think about when I'm going to exercise.
Yeah, I think that's important. I mean, of course, it's not always going to go great, but you know, I try and have a plan going into anything, right? So it's good. You have to think about what could possibly happen, then you make your plan and see how it goes. And hopefully sometimes it goes according to plan. Tell us if you can. I think you're wearing a continuous glucose monitor. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. So can you tell us some of maybe the benefits that you think help you with wearing or using a CGM during exercise?
Absolutely. I think having lived so much of my life with diabetes without a continuous glucose monitoring system, I can say the challenges were just constantly having to poke my finger, you know, stopping practice, stopping, you know, whether it was a game, just to make sure that I could test to know what was going on. And having a CGM device has allowed me to have up to 288 readings a day. You have so much more data and so many more numbers to work with. You can see the trends, you can see the direction that your sugars are going. and it makes it a lot easier to be proactive. I can treat a low sugar before it happens, where before it would honestly be, I have to base it on how I'm feeling. Sometimes I could mix up a low blood sugar with a high blood sugar and how I was feeling. And so I think it really does help just being able to plan ahead. And even if I wasn't always planning ahead, just getting the alerts and alarms to, you know, notify me that I was having maybe a low or a high sugar has made it a lot easier, because otherwise you're almost going into this blind. You are just kind of hoping that what you're feeling is correct and, you know, imagining that a low blood sugar is actually what you're feeling, when really that might not be the case. And you can kind of confirm that and have that extra information with a CGM device, you know. And so I think that's one of the ways that it's helped me a lot. It can also help before exercise to know if I'm already trending down, I might want to have my snack a little bit earlier rather than waiting until maybe halfway through practice where I would normally have a snack. And so it just helps you a lot in that case, at least for myself. And I think for me, one of the most life-changing things about CGM has been overnight. And in addition to an automated insulin delivery system, reducing the risk of lows overnight. Because, you know, in my youth, I was having my parents wake me up in the middle of the night with finger pokes and treating low blood sugars, sometimes scary low blood sugars, because I didn't wake up to the low blood sugar feelings. And so now at least we have alerts and alarms that can make it a little bit easier, whether it's my family might wake up or I might wake up. It just makes it a little bit easier to navigate.
For you personally, have you found, is there like a better time of day to exercise, or it just doesn't matter? It depends on the day, or is there anything you can share about that?
Absolutely. I think it's variable. There is still research being done in this field. I think there's a lot of people that have now focused on time of day of exercise. It can matter, absolutely. But I think we also have to be realistic in understanding, like, I work in pediatrics. If I'm going to ask a child to wake up and do fasted morning exercise, it might not be realistic in the way that they live their life. They may live a more sporadic and unplanned type of exercise lifestyle. And we need to understand that too, and kind of find ways to make exercise work for us. But if we did have the choice, we generally see that, you know, morning exercise, particularly in the fasted state, may reduce the risk of lows compared to, you know, late afternoon exercise, where we might have more insulin in the circulation. We don't have, you know, the impact of growth hormone and cortisol like we do in the morning, and, you know, maybe less insulin resistance in the afternoon. We can see that probably there's a higher risk of lows with the studies that have been done with afternoon exercise. And then, of course, the delayed risk of lows after exercise too. This may go into evening dinner hours, overnight, with that higher risk of lows, especially after afternoon exercise.
Well, I learned something. I didn't for sure know that it was a little easier to manage if you do it in the morning versus later in the afternoon.
I do think it's important, though, that it is just variable, right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's not always black and white. This is based on the research studies that we do have. And I think that more research needs to be done on this field. But we learn with every new publication that it is maybe something we should be considering.
Yeah, or at least even, you know, if somebody wants to try it, right?
Exactly.
Then we can say, okay, we have some research that shows this. If this fits into your lifestyle, I'm pretty sure it's not going to fit into many pediatrics lifestyle. But as they get a little older, you know, maybe they'll do it then. But yeah, I just think it's important to know, of course, the research, and then you implement it, and does this help me or doesn't? Because there are so many challenges that if we could just eliminate one, it would be helpful. So can we talk about some of the other research that you have? I think you've done some research with CGM, right, and the accuracy of CGM, and I think some of it's been done with Dexcom G6. Can you talk a little bit about the studies that you've done with related to continuous glucose monitoring?
Absolutely. So a lot of the research that I do is related, at least in some capacity, to exercise and technology. And so some of the earlier work that I published was on, you know, using CGM during exercise. We've since kind of published consensus guidelines on how to help navigate exercise while using these devices. And no one device in particular, it's important that all of these devices do work in a similar way. And that is, we often see that there is an increased lag time during exercise, or really the way I like to think about it is with rapid changes in glucose, whether that's two arrows down or two arrows up, or just really rapid changes in either direction. We can see that CGM technology generally works very well at rest. And a lot of people, you know, when we study these devices, we study them at rest. We started to study these devices during exercise and published actually this increased lag time. And it's a little bit like a delay. We don't think about it necessarily as accuracy because lag time just means that it's just taking a while to catch up. And we have to understand the way that these systems work is that we're comparing either capillary finger stick blood sugars or a YSI kind of gold standard measurement that measures, again, blood versus interstitial glucose, which is what continuous glucose monitoring systems measure. They are not always going to be completely, you know, related and exactly the same number. There is always going to be some delay or some error with technology that you use. And we tend to see that during exercise, that lag time or that delay is increased by anywhere from 15 to 30 minutes. We've also seen that with newer technology. So, you know, we might have tested this with G4 and G5, but now with G6 and G7, all of the kind of newer technology advancements mean that the lag time is decreasing generally, the accuracy should be improving. And so it is important that we talk about if this isn't something that you experience or notice, that's okay. But if it is, then how can we kind of navigate exercise with the technology that we're using? And so one of our big kind of take-home messages has been not calibrating the devices during exercise is just being kind of patient, waiting until the end of exercise, maybe 30 minutes in recovery, maybe doing more proactive kind of finger pokes, you know, if you have the opportunity to do so. If you don't trust kind of what the CGM is telling you during exercise, these are all kind of ways that we've been trying to say, how can you use the system to the best advantage so it's actually helping you? We're not trying to say don't use these systems. We know that they've been life-changing and super important for many people. So it's more important to just educate and learn how to do so safely.
Yes. So let's talk about some of the other research more with respect to automated insulin delivery systems. And if we can, just give our listeners a few maybe practical tips of how to either our HCPs out there that are listening, like how can they help their patients when their patients want to exercise? Or if we have a person out there living with diabetes who wants to exercise, maybe some practical tips of automated insulin delivery system with type 1 and exercise.
Yeah, I think what I might start with is first a more kind of general, because a lot of people aren't on automated insulin delivery systems. So from a more general standpoint, I think there are three tips that I can give that would apply for anyone with type 1 diabetes. And that would be healthcare providers or patients living with type 1. And I think what's most important is educate yourself on how to best use the tools that you have for exercise. So of course, if that's CGM, if that's automated insulin delivery, if that's multiple daily injections, it's educating yourself on what do I need to know when it comes to exercise. And by educating yourself, I mean using the exercise consensus guidelines. They are meant to be there as a starting point. I think a lot of times people don't know where to look for these exercise guidelines. Reaching out to me or looking online and finding the exercise guidelines, they are a little bit overwhelming. It can be a lot of information. And I think what's important is taking small steps. So finding out what the guidelines suggest, whether that means reducing our insulin before exercise, trying not to exercise with too much insulin on board, using the tools like if you're using CGM, being proactive and being ready to have your glucose meter handy, treating before a blood sugar is actually low to prevent the risk of a low, all of these can be important tips. But I think what's also really important is the patient goal should always be first. So whether that's you as the person living with diabetes or your healthcare professional that's helping you navigate exercise, the first and most important thing should always be what is your goal as the person living with diabetes? Because your goal may be weight loss. It may be just trying to increase my steps by 1,000 steps today. It may be trying to do an Ironman. And all of those different situations may require different adjustments or different, you know, individualized approaches on how to exercise safely. So I think what's really important for especially the provider is finding out what does your patient actually want out of this? And what is their goal first and foremost? Because I think what's important is SMART goals. It has to be achievable and attainable and small. We don't want to have something that's so far reaching and we're trying to do everything all at once. One of my big tips is I also like to recommend making one change at a time. A lot of the times the guidelines can recommend 100 different strategies, and that's because exercise is so difficult to navigate. But if you make three changes today and it works, you don't know which one of those three strategies was the thing that helped. Is it all three? Or in a different situation, if you do three different things and it doesn't work, which one of those things actually caused it to not work? Was it all of them combined? Is it two things that you didn't maybe need to do and you could only do just one thing and get by? We want to make it more simple for the person living with diabetes. And the last kind of thing that I would suggest is just be patient. I sort of started with this and I will kind of reiterate it that diabetes is difficult to manage around exercise on a good day, but many of our days are difficult days with diabetes around exercise. And don't give up. I think it's really important that we are patient and just try again the next day. It takes time to actually find something that works. I can also touch on automated insulin delivery because some of the specifics around AID and exercise would be similarly. Each automated insulin delivery system works a little bit differently. And I think it is important to remember that you have to understand how your system works compared to maybe a different system, because the recommendations are similar in the sense of pre-exercise. If you can plan ahead, setting an exercise target, meaning increasing your glucose target before exercise, 1 to 2 hours before, it's always great if you can pre-plan with an AID system. So setting that exercise target in advance of exercise. But what's important is we're only really doing this if you're at an increased risk of lows. If you've been letting the system just work on its own and it's working well, you don't need to really change anything. And I think that's also important. We focus on hypoglycemia because it's one of the leading barriers to exercise and one of the greatest challenges. So by setting an exercise target, increasing our glucose before exercise, it can make it a little bit easier to manage. It means that we may have less insulin on board before exercise. So these are all practical tips that should make it a little bit easier to get into the exercise and not have to treat lows throughout the exercise every 5 minutes. And so these are just some of the strategies we recommend. Setting a higher exercise target in advance of exercise or when you remember. Always having carbs handy if you need to treat a low or prevent a low before it happens. Checking your CGM, because if you're using an AID system, you're going to have some form of CGM. Taking a look at what those values are and what the trend arrows are showing you can help you be proactive. Even if it means taking a 2-minute break in between your practice, is just taking a look at what your trend arrows are showing and then going right back to doing what you were doing beforehand. Otherwise, we know that if you've kind of already had a low blood sugar, you're going to be stopping, waiting at least 15 to 20 minutes minimum to treat that low blood sugar. You may start to feel all the symptoms of low blood sugars, and it just really means that you're not able to participate in the activity you were doing.
Do you have any go-tos, like in terms of nutrition, that you like to eat, things you like to eat when exercising? This would just be what you do.
Yeah, this one's tricky, right? Because I think even for me, like diet can change. For me, the type of sport that I do, it's sometimes if I am cutting weight for competition, for example, my diet may look very different than if I was doing just regular, you know, not prepping for competition. I may be eating something that's higher carb. And so I think, again, it goes to show that there's just a lot of variability in diet. No one diet works for everyone. So for me, I think what's really important is depending on what my glucose is doing before practice and how much insulin I have on board, I may want to have a carb-heavy snack beforehand. Maybe something like a higher carb granola bar. It's going to have some protein, some fat, some carbs, something that makes it a little bit slower releasing rather than something like maybe a juice box or candy. Not that I don't have those things. That might be something that I might use to treat a low blood sugar. And I think for me, one of the most important things is if we're trying to prevent the low blood sugar from happening, having that slower releasing carb can be important. Still have the fast acting carbs handy to treat the low. And it's just important that we have everything kind of available so we don't have to worry in a situation if we do have a low blood sugar. But I do often like to fuel before exercise, and I often don't like to eat too close to the start of exercise. I know for me, one of the challenges is having too much food in my system when I exercise. Personally, I just find I might feel nauseous, and the last thing I want to do is have too much food in my system. But there's a fine balance because the food that we eat is also the fuel that we're using as well. So I think it is important that we haven't not eaten in 5 hours, but we also don't want to eat maybe 30 minutes before practice. At least for me, that's how I feel.
Yeah. Oh, you know, it just made me think. So this past weekend was the New York City Marathon, and I saw there was a lot of people with the type 1 diabetes exchange. I saw it on Instagram. They did great. They had a great time and they managed, you know, with automated insulin delivery systems, this particular group that I happen to be following. So, yeah, I mean, anything can be done, of course. We just have to learn about these things, know what works for you, at least a starting point, know about the guidelines. And they can be overwhelming. So maybe just take it in or go over with your doctor, I think, for the person who might be listening out there. Would you say in general, do you have to set your target higher for exercising, or can you just talk to us a little bit about setting targets during exercise?
Yeah, if you're using an automated insulin delivery system, again, the big question is what generally happens to you and your blood sugars during exercise? I know many kids that just let their system work and they are not pre-planners. They may not be setting higher exercise targets and the system works well for them. So I think it's important that if it's working well, don't change something that's not broken. But if you seem to be having these challenges, low blood sugars are happening every other time or every time you exercise, then maybe we need to start thinking about, can an elevated exercise target pre-exercise help you? So setting it early just gives us more time for the system to actually get the blood sugars to come up. I think what's important is say the target when you set it, depending on the system you're using, is going to increase your glucose to 150 and your usual target is at 110. So to get it up to 150, it doesn't just happen like the snap of your fingers. It takes time and insulin is just slow to get in and out of the body. And this is why we often recommend making these adjustments and settings an hour or two before. Give the pump enough time to cut back on the insulin or just to get your target to 150 if you're having this increased risk of lows every time or more often than not when you exercise. But I think it is important that we highlight if that's not something you struggle with, or especially in pediatrics, sometimes I see kids that are struggling with highs all the time. And it's important that if you want to try exercising without setting an exercise target and your blood sugars are running high all the time, it may actually just be a way to get your blood sugars in target range without doing anything extra. So I think it is really important talking to your healthcare provider, knowing that also social media is not always the best place to go, depending on what people's credentials are. People might be explaining what works for them. And, you know, I think there's a lot of great community out there with diabetes and people working together. And I think it is really important. But I think it's also important to highlight that you want to have this information given to you from a healthcare professional or someone who has a lot of experience in this field, because, you know, what works for them may not be what works for you.
Yes. So tell us about some exciting things in research that you're looking forward to working on next, or that you're just thinking about if you've started, or what are your thoughts there?
Right now, we are working with newly diagnosed youth with type 1 diabetes. And part of our current program is called the 4T exercise program. And what it involves is starting kids on activity trackers at new diagnosis. So within the first month of diabetes diagnosis, we are integrating exercise education over telehealth. And it all started during the COVID-19 pandemic. We weren't able to see patients in clinic. And so we started doing exercise education, basically finding ways to safely exercise, increasing knowledge, increasing confidence, reducing barriers to exercise by having these sessions. But of course, what's important is that we've had a lot of great success with this program, but we're at the stage now that we want to start scaling the program. You know, I started doing the education myself, but I'm one person and we want more people to be able to help in diabetes, because there are so many qualified diabetes educators and healthcare professionals that can deliver this education. They often just don't have the resources. So we have built resources and we are getting to the stage next where we are ready to share these resources, have other clinics start to integrate this into their practice to be able to help and educate all families with diabetes. Of course, we started this with newly diagnosed youth with type 1. Because no one had ever studied a systematic way to deliver education and study activity patterns in newly diagnosed youth. But beyond that, established care, type 1 diabetes, adults, whoever it may be, they still should be having exercise education that can be beneficial. So our next stage is really trying to take this program that we've developed at Stanford and scaling it to understand how this works at different centers, people that may have one diabetes educator versus a clinic that may have seven diabetes educators. We may do things a little bit differently. We want to provide this support by having those resources available. So the diabetes educators and the clinicians and the providers can have the tools that they need to provide this education to families.
So is that happening now? Is there a place that people could go to find that information, or that's not available yet?
Right now, everything is within Stanford. We have not been able to scale this yet. We just received funding and great news that we're actually going to be scaling this. So part of the work that we're doing right now is building the resources that we need on a website and having a platform available where we can share a lot of this information. So we are just in this kind of process of being able to deliver this education more broadly. And not only within our institution at Stanford, we want to be able to deliver this nationally and internationally in the future. So we are just received funding to do this. So this will be some upcoming work that we're doing.
Okay, exciting. So before we close today, is there anything else? I wasn't sure if we got to everything that you might have wanted to discuss. So you can think about that before we wrap. And if not, maybe just give us your three big takeaways again for anyone listening, and what they can do right now to help them get started, to start exercising, and what they could do.
One important piece as we're kind of wrapping everything up is, you know, when I think about three things that I can ask of people to engage in exercise and what they should be doing is, first, take that step. Find out what your baseline is and what the next step is for you. For one person that maybe they're training for some really elite level competition, for the next person that may be simply getting an activity tracker or getting a pedometer or having some sort of tool that can help them maybe track using their devices if they have a smart device or some kind of tool that they can use to track their activity, whatever it may be, taking that first step and having a small goal. It is going to be different for every person, but I think it's just trying it out. And another kind of tip that I always like to give people is, find out what's not working and what your challenges are. If everything is easy with exercise, then you just keep doing what you're doing and maybe give me a call if you have any suggestions and tips. As we keep to research in this field, we're finding out that exercise is just difficult to navigate. It's so variable for everyone. So going back to another important tip is, be patient. It could take a long time to integrate a new habit into your daily life. So when we say setting an exercise target before activity, some people say, it doesn't work. I don't remember to do it. That's fine. And it may not work for everyone, but give it time. It can take 21 days to build a new habit. So be patient. Try it. It may be that 3 days this week you forget and 2 days you remember, but try again next week. And so being patient is really important. And I think the last tip is, stay connected. Whether it is with the diabetes community, whether it is within your clinic, whether it is just anyone at these events, social media can have ways that you can connect with people with diabetes, just finding out what other people try and do, but also talking to your healthcare professional and finding out what your diabetes educators are recommending. Reaching out to the community can be a great way. Reaching out to me, I'm happy to share kind of all of the resources that we have, but I think it's important to stay connected and realize that you're not alone. I think a lot of the time people with diabetes feel they don't know where to start, and you can feel very isolated and alone with this condition. You can feel that you're dealing with something that nobody else is, but I think the reality is we're all kind of trying to figure this out every day. I have challenges every day that I try to navigate, but it's important that we kind of stick together and help each other out.
Yes, I love it. So we'll include a link to how people can get in touch with you if they want to. So you'll let us know that, and we'll be sure to include that. So Desi, I just want to thank you so much for your time today. It was so interesting and enlightening, and I know we're going to help a lot of people out there.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me, and always happy to talk about exercise. Please reach out. I'll be happy to share some resources and get started. Today's a great day to get started.
So we're wrapping up on this episode. Desi, thanks for joining us today on Real Time Real Talk. It was a pleasure and a privilege to hear about all your research, your personal experience with type 1 diabetes, and the exciting work you're doing to improve diabetes care. If you want to hear more about us, head over to www.dexcom.com for more information on all things Dexcom. Thanks for listening to Real Time Real Talk. For all previous episodes of the podcast, catch up wherever you get your podcasts, and we'll see you in the next one.